Good morning. The light in here in the morning is just so nice. There's something like light that is filling this whole room. I think that's what it means when we say light fills this room or light fills a room. It is so great. Everything is equally illuminated. We all look our best. No ugly fluorescent shadows. There's a line that we just chanted about renouncing worldly affairs. And I don't think Dogen meant that as saying that the fruition of this practice is all of us processing down to Tassajara for the rest of our lives. So I just wanted to say that, and it brought up the memory that that I think one of Catherine's great skills was integrating. This practice, which is kind of different than the life I lead outside of these doors. But I mean, that's one way of looking at it. This sitting, this bowing, this chanting, this charcoal and incense world that is within, you know, these couple hundred square feet is a little different than the rest of my life, but I think Catherine did a good job of showing us how to integrate this practice and the life outside of the Zendo. You know, I think even Suzuki started that out. You know, he didn't think that Buddhism was going to survive in America as a monastic religion. So right away he was integrating this Soto Zen practice with the life of those hippies and householders and beat poets that were sitting in a room just like this with him. You know, initially I certainly liked coming to the Zendo as a refuge from stresses in life, which, you know, my stresses weren't any different than anyone else's, so the stresses of daily life. It was kind of a refuge to just sit in this posture in a room with such great light and relax body and mind. But I think, you know, we learn to perfume the rest of our life with this mind that we were developing with our sitting practice and our sesshin practice. Catherine's liturgical year was pretty routine. We had daily sitting available here. Did Coben have daily sitting? Did his group, even when Coben wasn't here, did his group kind of set up? Did they have certain days?
I don't think so. I mean, I never saw a schedule posted. Uh-huh. It was sort of hit and miss.
Yeah. What did the website say in 1969? Good. I'm glad you like that. So maybe that was a Catherine institution to establish daily practice and or the availability of daily practice for people whenever they wanted to come here whatever day they would like to come, or 2 days, or every day. And then there were two practice periods, 8 week practice periods every year, in the early part of the year, the winter, and then just like this one, the fall practice period. And each practice period started with a weekend sesshin right here, and ended with a 5 day sesshin. Initially, it was all those 5 day sesshins were done at Jikoji. I mean, for over a decade. And then we started doing the 5 day sesshins here. And in those practice periods, she would teach a 6 week class, you know, sometimes Dogen, sometimes the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Diamond Sutra, kind of the great books of Buddhism, of Soto Buddhism. And then frequently, or every so often, there was also a weekend sesshin in the middle of summer, and a 4 week class in the middle of summer. So that was kind of how we all learned Buddhism in the 90s. And and of course she taught here until her death in 2012. When I went to Tassajara for my one practice period, I certainly don't want to give the impression that I feel like I knew it all. I already had the confidence that that I was developing the mind and body of practice in my life in Santa Cruz, and I was going to learn a little bit more at Tassajara, and I certainly did. I loved my 100 days there, and learned a lot. But I knew that it wasn't I didn't have to learn it all at Tassajara in the monastery, and maybe that's what Catherine convinced all of us of, that it's right here, and that Buddhism is our life, that Zen is our life, that Zazen is nothing other than the life we have right here. I appreciate that. Yesterday, I'll just do a quick recap. I'm looking at some of Catherine's sesshin talks to give us the structure and the pillar of support that I need and that I think is helpful for people in this sesshin. And I think Catherine spoke more than once about this practice developing trust in body and mind. The trust that that this body and mind can be open and meet fully all possibilities. And that this I equated with Catherine's yes practice. I'll just say yes to this opportunity because I'm developing trust in body and mind to meet fully all possibilities. Catherine actually gives us a few hints on how to do that, what this practice, this yes practice might look like, how to develop, trust in body and mind. Of course, if we're not doing this practice, if we're maybe not specifically developing trust in body and mind, we kind of meet the world, we still meet the world, but as we talked about a little yesterday, we kind of do the same things over and over. We meet the world with the same habits, with the same ways of meeting the world. And as a matter of fact, we kind of make a story about everything that we meet in the world so that we can choose which habitual manipulation to meet it with. I've seen that before. I'm going to use this technique. Or I've seen that before. This is just like that other thing that I met before. I can use this technique. This is all unconscious. But I think that's how we do it. And as we practice, we're open to finally saying, that is a possibility that I've never seen before. And I think I can get close to that. I think I can become intimate with just this thing that I don't have a maneuver for. But I've got a little bit of trust now that I can sit with this. We can start this dance. There's several people in this session that are new to this center. And yesterday we talked about becoming one with Sasheen. And I'm just noticing how even people who aren't here every day or haven't been here for a long time, they're, you know, without too much pointing, without too much training, we're just all kind of picking it up together, and starting and dancing, doing the dance together. And it's nice to see. Not that this is the only dance that we need to do, but I think this is our, you know, this trust in body and mind gives us the capacity to dance. You know, to say, oh, I can do this dance. I want to be out on, you know, like going to a wedding of somebody you don't know very much and feeling like you're going to look silly on the dance floor. But I can do this dance. Let me just get my body and mind in here and do it a little more fully. Join this wedding party a little bit more fully. So Catherine says that the development of this trust in body and mind starts with just observing what our mind is doing, and maybe we'll see that we are kind of labeling and making up the world. Maybe making up the world that we see, or at least at the very least, we're putting a story on on everything we meet. What does she say on page 27? As we continue to practice Zazen, we begin to understand that our own mind is making up the appearance of the world and also reacting to it. So she's suggesting that not only do we make up the appearance of the world, we also, you know, that's, we're like both dance partners at the same time. We make up the story of who we're dancing with, and then we make up the dance to be able to follow the steps. What an ingenious plan. We begin to understand that our own mind is making up the appearance of the world and also reacting to it. So we watch as we sit here. We just watch what comes up in our mind, and listen to what, you know, the our thinking, the voice that's kind of reading our thoughts to us, or chanting our thoughts to us. And we might conclude by sitting here and not holding on so tightly to what's appearing in our minds. We might say, you know, this is all in my mind. And then Catherine suggests that if we can then return to our breath, or return to our body in Zazen, we're actually interrupting that habitual pathway that makes us think that, you know, am I thinking about the people in my life while I'm sitting here in Zazen that make me think that that's a real, true story about them. You know, I just have to say one name and this whole cascade of ideas and history spill out that color those thoughts, and I just keep building on that. You know, now I'm looking at people in my life, people that I'm involved with in my life, and I'm saying, what role does my ideas about gender play in this relationship? How does race appear in this relationship with this person? You know, what stories have already preceded my relationship? How did I write this? I should read it. What habitual story have I already told myself about this person as I engage with her? If I can get an idea, I can just sit with that and see if I can break that habitual connection. Maybe unconscious in our practice is, it's the unconscious to speak in Western psychological jargon, you know, maybe it's the unconscious that is the cause and condition of that voice, that thought that comes up. And if I can not hold on to that so tightly, not continue that pattern. Maybe I can break up this habit of separating the world into race and gender and class and already meeting a person with those stories already intact. Maybe I can loosen up those stories and become more intimate. Get a little closer. We need to find the motivation or a new response that is at the same depth of mind as where our habits originate. The wish to respond differently must be as deep and strong as the habitual response. The path to that depth arises from seeing again and again how we repeat ourselves. What a great roadmap that, you know, if I really want to meet the world more intimacy without separation and realize the reality of wholeness and unity, I have to meet, what did she say? I have to meet to find the motivation for a new response. We need motivation for a new response at the same depth of mind as where these habits originate. The wish to respond differently must be as deep and strong as the habitual response. So I have to have a little trust that I can go there. And sit there and meet the world in a very different way with new possibilities. I just have to. That's a hard one. That's a lifetime practice. That's why we say that this practice is for many lifetimes. I mean, Soto doesn't talk so much about reincarnation. But we mention it, and maybe this is the work of a few lifetimes. It's certainly, when we talk about, you know, the karma that we inherit, we're also pointing towards the possibility that it's already in motion. We're already in motion before we're born. So this is the work of many lifetimes, and it's the work of this lifetime. We start by watching thoughts and feelings, and in extended sittings like we're doing now, we sometimes have the opportunity to experience the space in which these thoughts and feelings arise. we might find ourselves stepping back from the contents of the mind to the space in which the contents are arising. And we ask, who is thinking? What is this I? What is this? The point of practice, Catherine says, the point of practice is to ask this question. What is this I? What is this? And you know, maybe when in our sitting, an extended sitting such as this, she says, we can also get a glimpse that this I, this Patrick that I'm so in love with, that I know so well, that too is a causal fiction. It's a product of causes and conditions that's impermanent. And by its very impermanence, you know, maybe I shouldn't grasp on so tightly to it. And maybe that's the beginning of this process of not dividing the world up into this and that, is also not holding so tightly to this, and when this is a little cloudier, is a little more porous, maybe this has the trust to meet that hazy cloud of a that, and that the reality of wholeness and unity can start to reveal itself. When we begin to understand that our own mind is making up the appearance of the world, and we're also reacting to it, gradually understanding this, the mind is not so disturbed by itself and begins to relax. We begin to acknowledge some deep taste from Zazen, some deep taste of our life. And I don't think she means that it's this deep taste of Patrick. I think it's the deep taste of the wholeness, the reality of life. We start that deep taste. In my many rounds of therapy, which I truly recommend and truly appreciate, I get a deeper understanding of the causes and conditions of my life. And when I can understand that, it's very liberating. But I don't think that's the deep taste. I don't think she's talking about the deep taste of Patrick that emerged because of my, you know, difficulties in my parents' relationship or difficulties with my siblings. I don't think that's the deep taste. I think when we're really able to start looking at this mind, and when we can have some insights into this individual personal life, I think that allows us then to start experiencing that deep taste of the world as it is, the reality of this world, the wholeness of this world, the unity of this world. each time we return to inhalation and exhalation, we interrupt the conditioned pattern of the mind. Each time we leave our storyline to return to the breath, we strengthen our awareness that breathing is what is actually happening, and storytelling is our fictional life. We acknowledge our thoughts and reactions as our storytelling mind rather than what is actually happening. We also pay attention to the sensations of the body without doing anything about them. As much as possible, we don't move away from them. We don't judge or interpret or comment on them. Sensations are not right or wrong. We practice to see what is right in front of our face. So I think these are valuable guidelines that Catherine is kind of explaining the process of this sitting and how to meet what's emerging in this sitting. And she's hinting that it takes, she's pointing to the value of this opportunity for sitting, you know, several periods over several days, in developing that trust. And I think she's even pointing to the work of a lifetime, the practice of a lifetime, and the practice of many lifetimes. And when we can, I talked yesterday about preaching to the choir here. We're all signed up for this. Many periods, many days. It just seems like even talking about, you know, that this is the practice of many lifetimes. I think we've got the tools to do it. I think maybe that's the confidence that I've developed, that gee, I can do this. I know how to sit here and work on the liberation, that's the liberation for all beings. That's just the work that's laid out for us, that's always been laid out for us. And you know, I think I've got the confidence that I can do this. I can do this in this life, and I can do this in many lives to come. It's just the work of this life. It's the practice of this life. So maybe we can sit with our lives, the causes and conditions in our lives, and work with it in the way that Catherine suggests now. May the merit of the Sesshin be dedicated to the liberation of all beings in this lifetime and the lifetimes to come, and the liberation of all beings in past lifetimes. And may this effort, may this confidence continue endlessly. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible.
Waves unsurpassable.